Presbyterian pastor and scholar Craig Barnes has this to say about Easter. No one is ever ready to encounter Easter until he or she has spent time in the dark place where hope cannot be seen. Easter is the last thing we are expecting, and that is why it terrifies us. This day is not about bunnies, springtime, and cute new dresses. It's about more hope than we can handle. The question Easter asks of us is not, do we believe in the doctrine of the resurrection, but have you encountered a risen Christ? When Mary and Peter and the other disciple went to the tomb where Jesus' body had been, they saw nothing, or rather, they saw no one. It was an unfilled space, littered with a few pieces of cloth, but a space that had somehow been emptied. It was proof of nothing except the reality that the body of their beloved Jesus was no longer there. It was their dark place, the place where hope could not be seen. But then, outside the tomb, in a garden still a bit damp from the morning's first frost, Mary meets someone, a gardener maybe, a savior maybe, and that is when Easter happens. When the risen Christ calls Mary by name, and she knows that everything that he had said was really, truly true. That is when Mary experienced more hope than she could handle. Easter did not happen in that mystery between God and Jesus when God raised Jesus from the dead. Easter did not happen when Mary saw that the stone in front of the tomb had been rolled away, nor when Peter and the other disciple wondered about those folded up cloths. Easter happened when Mary encountered the risen Christ. And Easter happens when we do the same. Perhaps it would be helpful to bring that phrase to life, to imagine or describe what it is to have an encounter with the risen Christ. I think that it has something to do with those things that show us that life is stronger and better than death, and that love prevails through it all. Let me share a few stories with you, which I think help us understand or see or know somehow intuitively that there is a risen Christ, because life is stronger than death and love prevails. Perhaps you, like me, are concerned about our kids, about the pressures that they face, about what's going on in our schools and in our neighborhoods, and what we're learning about adverse childhood experiences and its effect on adult health. Perhaps you've also heard about kids doing some pretty amazing things for their friends and their peers. So imagine you're at school, it's lunchtime, you're in the cafeteria, and you don't know where to sit because you don't know who will welcome you. Teenager Natalie Hampton had been there, and a few years ago, when she was a high school junior, she created an app called Sit With Us. She explains, at my old school, I was completely ostracized by all my classmates, so I had to eat lunch alone every day. When you walk into the lunchroom and you see all those tables of everyone sitting there, and you know that going up to them will only lead to rejection, you feel extremely alone and extremely isolated, and your stomach just drops. And you know that if you sit by yourself, there'll be so much embarrassment that comes with it because people will know and they'll see you as the girl who has nowhere to sit. There's so many awful feelings that come along with it. Natalie changed schools and her situation got better, but as she said, I felt if I was thriving in a new school but didn't do anything about the people who feel like this every single day, then I'm just as bad as those people who watched me eat alone. I felt like with my story, it was my job to stand up and do something about all the kids who feel like this every day. I wanted to create something that would address bullying, but in a positive way. Boca Raton high schooler Dennis Esteman had a similar experience. An immigrant from Haiti, Dennis remembers as a first grader feeling isolated, especially at lunchtime. He says, to me, it's like if we don't go to try to make that change, who's going to do it? So with some friends, Dennis started a club called We Dine Together. Their mission is to go into the courtyard at lunchtime and to make sure that no one is starving for company. Today, there are hundreds of We Dine Together clubs in high schools across the country. Both Natalie and Dennis and those who helped them had experienced a dark place and responded by creating something that offered hope. Many of you are aware of the terrible fire in the auto salvage yard in the nearby Cully neighborhood from a few weeks ago. Since that time, I had been looking at the website and the Facebook page of Living Cully, an organization that is committed to livability issues in that neighborhood. I was expecting them to ask for help, but I didn't see anything. And then last Saturday, our friends at Northeast Emergency Food Program tagged Westminster in a Facebook post, it's hard not to respond then, asking for some specific items for one person who had been displaced by the fire. Sunday morning, I got to church, I made up the list of items they were looking for, and I made 20 copies because I thought, oh, that's more than enough. I told the congregation at coffee hour they could go up and get a piece of paper, and by the time I got to coffee hour, all those pieces of paper were gone. One person brought her donation to the church, and I took it over to NEFP on Saturday. I took the clothes into their storage space, and I was confronted with a metal shelf that was taller than I am and about 6 feet wide that was brimming with donations. I talked to Cece and Travis, who are two of the staff members at NEFP, and they said the response to that little Facebook post was overwhelming. As an addendum, there will be more items needed, but right now those families and individuals displaced by the fire are staying in shelters and hotels, and they have nowhere to store anything. So if you're a local person, stay tuned, and I thank you in advance for your generosity. I can't imagine what a dark place it is to lose all of your worldly possessions. And I wonder if there is some hope in the kindness and the generosity of strangers. Last week in the New York Times, I read a wonderful piece by a woman named Margaret Renkel, writing about why she would be going to church this Sunday for the first time in a year. She says, "During college and graduate school, I tried to talk myself out of believing in God. The reasons not to believe were multifarious and convincing. The reasons to believe came down to one. I couldn't not believe. I seem to have been born with a constant ache for the sacred, a deep-rooted need to offer thanks, to ask for help, to sing out in fathomless praise of something. In time, I found my way back to God, the most familiar and fundamental something that I knew, even if by then my conception of the divine had enlarged beyond any church's ability to define or contain it. The year away from church hasn't made me miss the place itself. I don't miss the stained glass. I don't miss the gleaming chalice or the glowing candles or the sweeping vestments. But I do miss being part of a congregation. I miss standing side by side with other people, our eyes gazing in the same direction, our voices murmuring the same prayers in a fallen world. I miss the wiggling babies grinning at me over their parents' shoulders. I miss reaching for a stranger to offer the handshake of peace." And she concludes, "So I will be at Mass again on Easter morning, as I have been almost every Easter morning of my life. I will wear white and remember the ones I loved who sat beside me in the pew and whose participation in the eternal has found another form, whatever it turns out to be. I will lift my voice in song and give thanks for my life. I will pray for my church and for my country, especially the people my church and my country are failing. And then I will walk out into the world and do my best to practice resurrection." How will you live into Easter? Margaret Renkel will practice resurrection. Craig Barnes encourages encounters with a risen Christ. I invite you to seek out those places and those events and those people who will give you hope that life is indeed better and stronger than death. And I invite you to look for love in any situation you find yourself or the world in. And if you find that love, to mirror it. And I invite you, when you find yourself in that dark place where you cannot see hope, not to flee the dark, but to wait there a while, because it is often in the dark where we first see the light. On Good Friday, two beloved members of our congregation died. Sue Reif and Chrissy Thomas have joined the great cloud of witnesses of those who have gone before them. And whilst we are so sad today, there will be time in the coming weeks to celebrate their lives, to give thanks for the gifts that they left to us, and to remind each other of the promise of more life after death. I know that on this Easter day, some are still waiting in the empty tomb, grieving the loss of their beloveds. There is a holiness to that empty place, and you don't have to leave there too soon. As I said when I began, I am glad that you are here today, because it's better to go through grief and joy in community, where if we fall, someone will catch us. And if we sing, someone will join us. It is in community that we find hope. Hope that someone will sit with us when we're alone. Hope that someone will help us when we lose everything that we have. Hope that there is a God who is so much greater than all the pain and misery of the world. It is the hope of encountering resurrection, for Christ is risen and waiting to meet us again, to the glory of God.